After more than 20 years of planning, the Great Lakes Intertribal Council closed on the purchase of a 158-acre parcel of land west of Highway 51 in the Oneida County town of Cashin, north of Tomahawk, and officially blessed the ground. The site was chosen by the council for a new 36-bed residential facility for Native American and non-Native youth struggling with substance abuse disorders. But the proposed Adolescent Recovery and Wellness Center continues to meet opposition by the town board, some residents, and Republican U.S. Congressman Tom Tiffany, among others. Welcome to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Siewert. According to the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, the Adolescent Recovery and Wellness Center will offer services and responsive residential substance abuse treatment for youth ages 13 to 17, with priority given to Native American youth. If you have questions to ask or a comment to offer about these plans, you can email us at route51@wpr.org. You can also call in 800-780-9742. Our guest today is the CEO of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, which is a consortium of federally recognized Indian tribes in Wisconsin and in the UP. Brian Bainbridge, welcome to Route 51.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, this plan's been in the works for a long time. Why did it take so long to get to this point?
Well, you know, it's one of the reasons is, you know, because, you know, we have tribal elections. And, you know, at Great Lakes Intertribal Council, our board of directors is made up of all the chairpersons and our presidents of the respected sovereign nations. And, you know, just relearning about the project is part of it. The other part of it is, you know, it does take money to make sure that this can happen. And, you know, it's – and 20-plus years ago, you know, we were dealing with different things. We weren't in this opioid epidemic. And, you know, but we always had trauma and mental health issues that were within our communities. So, and, you know, alcoholism, you know, that was one of them. And that's where it all started in the talk. But, you know, the one thing is there was always that talk and how do we get it done and what do we do? And, you know, just getting the right people in place to be the driving force for this project, I think, was another one. And, you know, we have strong people. We always had strong people on the board, but, you know, once we decided, hey, we talked about this long enough.
Now,
you know,
we
need to do something, and let's move it forward to whatever it takes.
Yeah, you mentioned the opioid epidemic. I mean, you know, with fentanyl, we're hearing a lot about fentanyl now. And I mean, has that, in your opinion, has that kind of increased the urgency here?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's, it was stuff that we'd only see on TV and never thought that we would have, you know, some of this activity within our own communities, our surrounding communities, because it's not only on the reservations. You know, everywhere. Yeah, I talk to people from all over the country, and they say, you know what, you know, I know this person, or I've seen this, or I did that. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. What's the landscape like right now for teens who need this kind of help? Is how much help is out there today as it stands now?
Well, that's the problem. Mm-hmm. There's more need than there are facilities. And I get told every day, you know, you can't build this fast enough. And like I said, it's non-member people and, you know, tribal member people that are just, you know, there's such a need because, you know, we talk about people. And I mentioned earlier as we were just chatting around of, you know, I don't like to look at it as numbers, even though I have all the statistics. Not here at studio, but that we make our decisions off of informed, factual decisions. But you know, when I look at it and put things into perspective, you know, I like to think of the people you know, and really how that is relevant when you're looking at those numbers. When we have our relatives, even, you know, some of us have relatives that struggle. We have friends, or we have friends of friends, you know, that are doing this. So it just heightens that importance for this initiative, and brings a broader understanding. If you want to take the time to mm-hmm. understand it.
I want to clarify something. This is not a detention center, right?
No.
So these kids are here. They're going to be there voluntarily.
Yeah, this is the whole thought of this project is for the ones that are seeking help. At this time, we're not talking about having it court ordered through the courts. Because then that's a different structure, you know, when you have to, I think mm-hmm. it's kind of forced on a person, you know, this way they're going there because they want to get better. And, you know, and the question also comes around too, because we're used to dealing or comparing this stuff to alcohol treatment when you have your 30, 60, 90 days, mm-hmm. you know, and that's always been the process. And sometimes that still follows that process because, you know, that's just what people are, mm-hmm. that's all people know, you mm-hmm. know, some of them. And it's not that, you know, it's up to the individual really. I'm not saying we're going to keep someone there for years on end, but it's until someone is at a place for themselves to where, you know, they can move on and get back in the community or with their family or to wherever they're going.
Given that these kids are there voluntarily, I want to ask about an email that we had gotten from earlier from a listener who was wondering if there will be guards. I mean, will there be guards at the facility, or is that kind of not part of the plan?
No, and those are questions that we're asked too, and that's that comes with that common misconception of all people that have a problem are dangerous, mm-hmm. and it's so far from the truth. We'll have people there that monitor the youth that are there, the adolescents, 24/7. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's not just a 9-to-5 facility. It's 36 bed residents. You know, inpatient, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and you know we have our even through state. Licensing requirements and everything else that comes with it. There's a certain amount of people that have to be there that are professional, credentialed, licensed people, you know. And the other part is just because this is a tribal initiative doesn't mean it's going to meet the highest of standards. And that's where we're going with through making sure we have the process going through and getting all those state license. Making sure that the people are there are credentialed and licensed and have their proper training and education in order to perform these duties.
You mentioned funding, getting the funding piece in place and that it took some time to do that. So how is the center being funded?
Well, it just happened. You know, we went through this pandemic. I'm sure everybody remembers, you know, as we're moving through it. And there was an influx of dollars that come through. You know, all the states in the country got certain amount of money, and there was an opportunity to submit a grant proposal through the state, and you know it's competitive, and you know with all our fact-based information and knowing the high level of need, we ended up getting awarded one of the grants.
Okay. And then how will fees be paid? Is this something that the youth will have to go through insurance, or, I mean, is that a piece that you're still working out?
Well, we're still working that out, but you know, we'll take, you know, every form of payment, insurances, and even working for our, because this will serve Native and non-Native youth. So, you know, working with Indian Health Service on collecting that, collecting the
fees
or dues, mm-hmm, or whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm, the billing, mm-hmm, you know, making sure that billing structure is right to make sure that we're sustainable. So we're not overlooking anything like that, but you know, that's not the main focus. There's two parts of this.
Okay.
When you, I like to think, you know, in the developing a process, and I even talk about this when it comes to higher education, because a lot of times the funding gets in the way, mm-hmm, and you lose sight of really what that true initiative is. So separating that and not and trying not to commingle them conversations. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the individuals and what the needs are, and then we figure out the financial end after that.
Okay. One of the things that really caught my eye when I was reading about this is that the treatment program at the center will be culturally relevant. What do you mean by culturally relevant?
Well, you know, culture it just isn't one thing. You know, it's, and from the outside, a lot of times when you say, oh, culture, they're going to be having powwows every day, and this is going to heal them.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, it sounds funny, but it's true. It's reality. And, you know, we have, as you mentioned, how GLITSI is the members are formulated. It's, there's 12 separate sovereigns, you know, and that's, 12 different ways of demonstrating the culture, even though there's, you know, Ojibwe, Potawatomi, Ho-Chunk, Menominee, Oneida, Stockbridge, Munsee, Mohican, you know, and so, you know,
so we're trying to meld all those
things. So how do we do that? And individually, culture comes in and is needs to be presented in different ways, because it's even to our different societies and stuff, not everybody is a medicine person. Mm-hmm. You know, we have our hunters, we have our gatherers, we have our caretakers, and you have to be able to adapt that to the individual. And, you know, and when we talk about culture, you know, what existed back in the day,
sure,
before we were forced to do certain things. And, you know, when we look about revitalizing our language, mm-hmm, you know, that's a part of it. Teaching people how to even identify plants and use things as medicine. And, you know, there's such a broad array of what the culture is and what can be done with it just by taking a step back in time a little bit and moving forward in them old ways, because what that was teaching a person, no matter what tribe or band you're from, it was about centering that person and getting them set for, you know, as you hear of rites of passage, mm-hmm, you know, making their own journey through life. And, you know, we've seen it, mm-hmm, historically even, you know, that, you know, when you disrupt that and you take things away that are usually meant to help somebody and put them on the right path, you know, it kind of puts up roadblocks or gets a little wavy or, mm-hmm, or whatever.
Sure, sure. You're listening to Brian Bainbridge, CEO of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council. We're going to continue our discussion, boy, I can't talk today, on a planned adolescent treatment center in Oneida County, north of Tomahawk. You can join in, too, with your questions by sending us an email at route51@wpr.org. We'll take your calls, too, 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. We're discussing an adolescent treatment center planned for rural communities in Oneida County. Our guest is Great Lakes Intertribal Council CEO Brian Bainbridge. He's here to discuss the group's plans and address some concerns some residents and policymakers have expressed about that facility. There has been some pushback, some significant pushback. The Cashintown Board on August 14th voted to adopt a resolution opposing the development of the facility. And I want to bring this into it. 2 weeks ago, we had U.S. Congressman Tom Tiffany in the studio with us. We asked him in that conversation about the opposition to that project, and here's what he had to say. Well, of course, it's not playing now. That's how it goes. Well, we won't be able to play his clip, but basically, I will tell you this. He has concerns about the location. He asked about why this location? Why here? Why in a rural residential area? So let's tackle that first. What do you say about that? Those concerns about that location. Why did you choose this location?
Well, first he has to understand, you know, the process of even coming to this location.
Mm-hmm.
This was almost a 2-year process, lots of miles on the road. And, you know, when this project or this property was brought to our board of directors after vetting, at that time, 1,006 properties throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
Almost every county. And, you know, in the beginning stage, we wanted to keep it centralized, and we were actually looking at somewhere in Marathon County, somewhere close to Wausau. There was a couple properties at that time then that the real estate market was going crazy, and people were just writing checks, even if someone thought that someone else was looking at the property.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were getting cycled and out of the inventory, and we just had to keep looking. And I think the first time we set foot on the property in Cashin is actually coming up on just 1 year ago. So, you know, throughout that time, it was just one of many. And as these properties were cycling through the system, that one stayed on the market.
Okay.
And the other part of it is the importance of selecting. And the property had to have certain attributes within the property, because the property is part of the recovery and wellness plan for this facility and for the individuals. Utilizing the land, maintaining the integrity of the property to actually be able to do that.
Okay. What do you say to the concern about it being in a residential area? Are there safety concerns?
There's, I mentioned before, the people in the area should have more fear of the individuals driving north and south on Highway 51 than they should even dream about the individuals that are going to be in this facility. You know, it's the mention of armed guards and barbed wire, razor wire, this every individual that has a problem is dangerous. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, that's not the case. When it comes to voluntary services, that worry is truly, you know, diminished. Yeah, I can't predict if you never know if something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can't say nothing will ever happen. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that, you know, the way it's run and everything else, and compared to other facilities, which are slim to none, that really don't have problems because of how it's operated and the individuals in there, you know, I can speak pretty confidently that, you know, mm-hmm. there should be no fear.
Another point that the congressman made when he was here was about whether the property will be taxable, will remain on the tax rolls. What do you know about that?
Well, at this point, yes. Mm-hmm. And I even explained to the congressman, who actually in his position should know this better than I do, and I mentioned that to him, about putting land into trust. And within the reservation, because this is off reservation, mm-hmm. The reservations have trust land, which is entrusted within the federal government through the Department of Interior. You know, and that's where the sense and the notion of no taxes comes about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually, yeah, I would like to see this land, and so would our board of directors, like to see this put into trust, you know, so that the land is there for this purpose and for the membership for time immemorial. You know, it's if you go back in history on, you know, how things were operated before that, you know, the sale of lands and all that other mm-hmm. Stuff that happened, you know, this mm-hmm. probably isn't the time or the show for that. But, you know, there's history.
Sure. There's a Facebook group, Stop the Cashin Rehab Center. There are actually two Facebook groups about this. One is public and one is private. Have you seen it?
I'm not on social media, but I have seen screenshots and heard of it.
Some of the comments suggest issues with zoning codes. How do you anticipate overcoming any potential zoning issue?
Well, in the process of vetting properties and within the search, that was one of the things of myself and my team doing our due diligence and making sure that if there was a property that we fall within the ordinance.
Okay.
You know, and this property is actually, you know, the property wasn't grant funded. This was all equal shares that were contributed from each one of our member tribes that sit on our board. So they
put their money together
to purchase the property. And, you know, it was on my shoulders to make sure and ask the county, which I did several times, mm-hmm. you know, brought our pamphlet there, explained it, and said, hey, does this fall within the zoning code ordinance, and what would we have to do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when we started moving forward after we were vetting these properties that said, hey, you know, we can do this on this property. If we couldn't, we would have moved. You know, okay. We wouldn't have signed the papers and purchased this particular piece of property.
The final piece of pushback that I'm reading about is infrastructure issues. Will there be significant upgrades that will have to happen to make this work out? To roads,
Well, not necessarily. There are roads there. Mm-hmm. The upgrades that will probably bring in that will benefit everybody in that area would be connectivity to make sure that we have internet in the facility to make sure the power is sufficient. We even before I approached the town, because I was the one that approached the town when we finalized the purchase and said, hey, I want to be a good neighbor. I want to go to your in front of your town board and explain the project to let you know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when I went to their meeting, which
there were a lot of people there. Yeah.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. You know, I said, hey, this would be a benefit to make a partnership to support this because it was in their fire hall. Mm-hmm. And I seen they had limited equipment and stuff there. I said, this is one thing that we could partner on, you know, making sure that the EMS is not even for this facility, but for the township as a whole is sufficient. And if there's unmet needs, we can work together doing this. The only thing is they have to be willing to do that, and they have to be willing to have those conversations.
So you're looking for a partnership. You're looking to really partner with the town and create these, you know, these improvements as needed.
Yeah, and that's been from the beginning is, you know, we want to make sure we create these partnerships, true partnerships, and support each other. You know, it's not just – I don't want it to look like it's one way. Mm-hmm. Even though we have a project, we're going to be somewhere. We're going to be in this small township. We're going to be in the county. We want to make sure that we're all working together.
Yeah. Have you been surprised by the amount of resistance that you've seen? What do you think is behind all that?
Well, to be honest with you, most of the opposition, at least the vocal and the Facebook stuff that you mentioned, truly isn't about the project. It's about hate and racism. And whatever fear people have that, you know, and I've heard it, well, Indians are coming into town. And that's true. You know, it was glaring when I went to the board meeting. And it's not everybody. It's the most vocal because we have support from residents that have approached, that actually went to our ground blessing and said, oh, my God, this was amazing. I'm glad you let me be part of this.
What do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of this project?
Well, I'll try to censor myself.
Okay.
No. the most misunderstood part of this project is dangerous people, threats to the community, you know, because it's, even though it was explained, the thought, and still people, I mean, you mentioned Congressman Tiffany, of he plays to his audience. I mean, that's just, I know who he is. You know, I've known him for a long time. And, you know, he was playing to his audience at that meeting. And, you know, I even told him, after I explained to him how he supported the project in the beginning, was sitting on the floor in Madison and approved the money to do the feasibility studies and everything else under the Walker administration, that he was also fear-mongering to the people when he's yelling that these are dangerous people, these are dangerous people. And I even mentioned, I said, this is where people have that misconception that it is a threat, that this is something bad, and we can't do that.
When you were forming the idea for this center, why did you focus on youth rather than adults? What drove you to that conclusion that was the need that needed that you wanted to fill?
Well, you know, we always talk about, and I say, you know, we talk about different cultures, different tribes and bands within our organization. One thing that is consistent and it is true that we're alike is thinking of the next seven generations. Not that there's not a need for adult facilities, but we had to start somewhere. And, you know, we see people struggling and we see our young people. And if we can't help that younger generation move forward to even replace and make future leaders, whether it be in tribal politics or whatever, state or even federal, you know, we may be helping someone get to a point to even, you know, take Congressman Tiffany's seat eventually, mm-hmm. you know. So looking at it like that and knowing that we have more than just youth, but, you know, starting somewhere, you know, just like where do we go? How do we then make sure that we're developing future leaders, protecting our up and coming, you know?
Mm-hmm. I had an email from Bruce who wanted you to address this. Bruce said, please bring up the fact that this is a very secluded residential area in the woods, and the biggest concern is a change to a normal, quiet lifestyle. Two narrow dirt roads, one paved, which is safe for children and pets to walk on. Now looking at 70 employees perhaps using the roads. He's concerned about the risk to upsetting that quiet area. What do you say to Bruce?
Well, we want to maintain that quiet area. It's part of the model that is being developed to make sure it stays quiet. You know, it's not going to be become like a major thoroughfare where there's just steady, constant people coming in and out, you know. And I've had that conversation even with the closest neighbor right across the street, because that was a concern. And I said, yeah, you know, this isn't we're not planning on looking at it like our one of the tribal casinos, because that was another thing that came up. You know, this is going to have more traffic than a casino. No, it's not. You know, we want to make sure we maintain the integrity of the individuals that are in the facility. And that means, you know, preserving their own space and respecting that, you know, as they're going through this change in their life. You know, we don't need a lot of people. We don't need a lot of noise. We don't need a lot of traffic.
So is that 70 employees, is that about accurate? Or, I mean, do you have a sense of how many jobs this is going to create?
Well, 70's a little high.
Okay.
You know, we're looking at just shy of 50, and that's not all at one time. Okay. You know, when we're in full operations, and that's, you know, from our doctors and psychology, you know, and right down the list, you know, and it's, we'll need people to cook the food. We'll need people to maintain the grounds. We'll need IT people to make sure that we're online and everything's going good for whatever. I mean, everything is a digital world now. But, you know, it'll be close to 250 once we're at full capacity.
You're listening to Brian Bainbridge. He's our guest today, continuing our discussion on a planned adolescent treatment and wellness center for the Northwoods. You can send your questions and comments to us at Route51@WPR.org or call in 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shereen Seward. Brian Bainbridge, CEO of the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, stays with us for the hour. He'll answer your questions about the group's plans for a residential treatment facility as well. You can send those questions by email to Route51@WPR.org or call 800-780-9742. Brian, we discussed earlier that the center will give priority to Native American youth. Why is that a priority for the center?
Well, it's a priority because of who's initiating it and developing it.
Do you anticipate there being room for non-native youth as well?
Yeah, from the beginning, that's why it's been included in everything, even all the talks that, you know, we're going to try to provide for whomever needs service. I mean, it goes right down, just like, you know, during the pandemic, when it came to administering, you know, vaccines. The tribes were the leader in that, not only in Wisconsin, but across the nation to say, if whoever needs it, and if we have the means of doing it, we're going to do it. And it was demonstrated that, you know, more than tribal members were able to get some of the first vaccines that were out. You know, it's the same mindset. You know, make sure if our neighbors aren't healthy, you know, that's going to come on us as well, and we're not going to be healthy. So, you know, protecting us and everyone around is important.
Do you think you'll eventually try to expand as the need arises, or are we putting the cart in front of the horse here?
Well, right now, you know, it's we're not looking at expanding on this site, mm-hmm. but our model that we're developing is highly adaptable, and it's purposely done for like that. Not only for the state of Wisconsin, not only for Indian people. Even when we talk about culture, you know, everybody has some culture, cultural aspect of what, where they come from, or you know, maybe they just don't know yet. But to be able to develop this, because there's such a need, you know, and more of a more need than there is space mm-hmm. for youth, adults, and everybody else.
So this is a residential facility only. There's no day services or anything like that, or am I wrong?
No, we'll have some day services, but okay. You know, like I said, it has to be controlled. We have to make sure it's controlled, and a lot of that is will happen with wraparound services as people are transitioning, and we have families. It's not just the individual that's affected by this, you know. It's their family. It's the community. And that's one of the things when we talk about wraparound services is having true wraparound services for this, for the individuals. You know, because a lot of times we see that, you know, say, okay, you got wraparound services, and it's just like that revolving door. And that's the only part that's wrapping around. You know, once you leave it, it's you're almost forgot about, and
right.
You're not making those connections. So it's important to continue those connections and services, just in case someone stumbles.
Sure. Know? So there will be some of those supports for, you know, after somebody
yep.
leaves.
Yeah, aftercare.
Mm-hmm. How long typically do the kids stay? Is there a minimum or maximum time, or is it really individual?
It's individualized. I said in the beginning that. We're not just following that standard, I guess it's based off alcohol model
mm-hmm.
because there's, you know, that's been researched so much, kind of know the certain periods and points in someone as they're going through that recovery and getting sober of those timelines, you know, 30, 60, 90 day kind of things usually. But these are totally different. That's why it's so out of control. You know, we have people all over this country going in and out of these different facilities and making multiple trips back because it's, oh, you're there for 30 days, but that 30 days doesn't do it. It's up to that individual and really up to the substance they're on, too, of how long it takes to cycle out.
I had an email from James who has a question for you. Given the 3.1% unemployment in Oneida County and other challenges facing employers throughout the state, how do you plan on overcoming those challenges and ensuring that you recruit and get those 50 employees that you really need?
Well, you know, we're dealing with unemployment, you know, all over, you know, more than Oneida County. It's just that it's the nature of the beast right now. One of the things that we're looking at developing and we're actively seeking is we want to develop housing for employees and establish something so if we can recruit people, not if, but when, you know, I've already had several people reach out that heard about the project and the uniqueness of the project that actually want to come to work. Mm-hmm. It's just we're looking at a housing issue. And, you know, if go on any Oneida County data, housing is really the big problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if there's nowhere for someone to live or stay or, you know, transition if they're moving out of the area, you know, that those are the big barriers to the employment. You know, of course, you know, it's I mean it's you hear all the different numbers, you
sure.
look at it. But, you know, there are people around. There are people that want to work.
So you're trying to take a look at the challenges, the barriers, and then addressing those barriers as you see them.
Yeah, it goes with this whole project. You know, it's just you don't have one single mind track. You know, we think about, you know, how many employees it's going to take, what type of employee it's going to be in, and looking at that housing, that gap in the housing, you know, availability.
Will that take, you bought 158 acres of land. Is that something that you're thinking of for that property, or are you looking at other purchases in the future?
It could fit on that property. And we are actively seeking more land.
Okay.
If we're lucky, that's going to happen. But it's just what's available.
So what's next in the process? Where do we stand now? You bless the ground. Will you get the zoning you need, and when will you break ground?
Well, we're just finalizing our zoning, our package that we need to submit, our conditional use permit. And, you know, I mentioned that at the Town of Cashin meeting, because they said, why didn't you submit this yet? And there's a reason. It was intentional of why this wasn't done. One of the first 3-4 times I was at the zoning office and, you know, started writing these generic drawings and everything, because I wanted the questions answered within that package.
Okay.
If there were questions that come out of this, and now, of course, you know, we're getting highly scrutinized, and people they're going to want, you know, because the constituents are some, you know, really want to know,
mm-hmm.
which is fine, and that's part of the transparency of this, of making sure that we have the full package, that everything is lined out within the details of operations and, you know, how the building's going to look and what's going to be there.
So you're putting that together now.
Yeah.
What happens if they say no? What have you thought about that?
Well, you know, there's only one reason why they would say no.
So you're confident that this is going to.
Yeah, and that was part of the vetting process of looking at what's precedence, you know, within the law.
Mm-hmm.
The zoning, the ordinances, and how that's described.
Do you see anything from a state or federal legislative standpoint that could have or would smooth the way for you or future projects like this one? Is there something that could be done from a lawmaking standpoint?
Well, you know, one thing that I'm personally not trying to do is circumvent the law and have to recreate something in order for a project to happen. That's why it was important to go through the vetting process, ask the questions prior to signing on that dotted line and finalizing the purchase. And the other thing that I would say is, you know, I don't want to make this political because that's not what the project's about. It's about the people. You know, I want to move the politics out of it. And, you know, I don't want to, because when you get politics involved, then you scare people
mm-hmm.
that are in politics that, you know, should be making decisions based off facts. And sometimes it gets in the way.
You know, you're the CEO of a pretty large coalition of tribes. There are a lot of people that are in this group. Similarities, certainly, but as we discussed, each tribe has its own identity, its own set of challenges. So tell me a little bit more about how you navigated all those differences and worked together to come to a common vision for this project.
Well, you just said it. We have to have a common vision. And we have to look at what all the tribes are dealing with. There isn't a one that's not affected by substance use or mental health and the lack of services and the demand for the need. So that there, you know, kind of brought everybody together. And there's really no questions on the need to do this. And, you know, this is the first time that, you know, the tribes within the Great Lakes Ordination actually had a collaboration where they're all in together, you know, beyond our organization, but actually invested into this, you know, with their own hard dollars and put this initiative forward because of the importance, because of that common theme of, hey, you know, we're going through that ceremony again that we don't want to do for someone that wasn't ready to go. You know, we have overdose deaths or suicides, and that's becoming more and more common. Even the suicides, you know, it's something that, you know, that we barely thought would happen.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the Great Lakes Intertribal Council as a whole. This project was identified as something that furthers your mission. And your mission statement, I have it in front of me, you brought the booklet here, to enhance the quality of life for all Native people. So you have a mission statement, you have a vision statement. So, I mean, it's a tall order. So how in what other ways does the council work to further that mission? What other initiatives do you have that really speak to that?
Well, it's demonstrated throughout all our programs, through our elder service, to our voc rehab services, through our epidemiology and health services, through our youth prevention services. I mean, everything that we host, our economic development, even. You know, that is our drive. And, you know, there's this little bit of story when it comes. When I first started during our all staff meetings, that was on the agenda all the time, reading of the mission. And, you know, I used to sit on the board of directors, a former chairman of my tribe, Redcliffe, and, you know, going through the changes through Great Lakes and seeing that on both sides. And then when I was asked to fill the position, he was like, okay, I see this on the agenda. You know, why is this here? Why do we take the time to read that? And if we're going to take the time to read it, we have to make sure in every step of the way of delivery and communications of the people that we serve, that we're following that mission. It goes beyond just this facility. It's within everything that we do.
We've got about a minute or so left in our time together, and you are confident that this facility is going to move forward. Do you have kind of a ballpark timeline as to when you think it will ultimately open, when all of the I's will be dotted and the T's will be crossed and everything is done?
Well, if we can follow our timeline that we have for, I guess, breaking ground, it's about a year it'll take to construct that, and that'll be a year from mid-October to early November, from early November. So, you know, as we're moving through this process with the and doing it as we're supposed to, going through the permits and getting all this stuff done, you know, should be open within a year from this fall.
All right. So that's really the target then.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to thank you for coming in today and answering these questions and talking about this center and giving us some more information about it. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks a lot for the invitation.
You bet. This is Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Once again, sincere thanks to our guest, Brian Bainbridge. Our producers are Joy Ratch-Kramer and Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program as well as our previous programs at wpr.org/route51. If you have an idea for a future program, email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be back with another fascinating discussion, and we hope you'll join us. Thanks for listening to Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.